Welcome to Central Line, Leadership in Healthcare, the show that shares stories, experiences, and advice from notable and innovative leaders in healthcare. Leading in healthcare is incredibly challenging. So if you are looking to learn firsthand from nurses, physicians, administrators, and other healthcare professionals in leadership and management roles, this is the podcast for you. Hosted by Leah Wutchik, leadership development expert, executive coach, healthcare professional, and president and co-founder of Tall Trees Leadership. We talk with today's successful healthcare leaders on how they get to where they are, lessons learned along the way, and what it takes to thrive as a successful leader in healthcare. Let's get started with your host, Leah Wutchik.
Jason Platts is a program manager at the Canadian Mental Health Association Ottawa branch. He has worked 29 years as a helping professional. The last 16 years have been in the field of mental health and addictions. He is passionate about leadership in community-based mental health organizations. Jason has a background in social work and leadership. Danny Lang has been working in community mental health for over 30 years. He is currently employed at the Canadian Mental Health Association in Ottawa. He has a wealth of experience working within nonprofit organizations, community development, group and individual counseling, professional mentoring, and coaching. He has a Master of Social Work from Carleton University, and he is a member of the Motivational Interviewing Network of Trainers. Good morning, Jason and Danny. How are you today?
Doing well. Thanks for having us.
Wonderful. Well, I am so glad we were finally able to connect to make this happen. I am really excited to have both of you share your extensive knowledge and wisdom. I know the two of you have been in healthcare-based services for quite a while. So maybe to get us started, I will just ask each of you to maybe share who you are and what you do right now.
I'm Jason Platts. I'm a program manager at the Canadian Mental Health Association. I've been here since 2008. I was originally in the role of an outreach worker working with the inner city health team and working with clients that were homeless and living with serious mental illness. And since 2016, I've been in the role of program manager or supervisor.
And my name is Danny Lang. Similarly, I'm in a program manager role at Canadian Mental Health Association as well. I've been here 22 years.
Wow.
And I've been in a variety of roles. So right now I'm providing, you know, support to a team of outreach workers that are working with homeless individuals and trying to work for, you know, working from a housing first model to house individuals that are currently homeless and have severe mental illness and substance use. So I've kind of been in a variety of roles at CMHA in terms of housing outreach myself, concurrent disorders treatment, individual and group therapy for a lot of years, and been in this role as a program manager, just going into my third year now, or my fourth year, one of those two.
Wonderful. Now, this is such important work, and I'm curious to know, and maybe Jason, I'll go to you first. What brought you here?
So Danny and I, like, we totally geek out around leadership. We love talking about leadership concepts and theories, and that's why we're here. When I was younger, I never saw myself as a leader. I was kind of like a little bit of a punk rock kid causing a bit of a ruckus. And I really wanted to get into the helping professions. So when I was in my early 20s, you know, I had gone to school and I'd been working in the field for probably about 25 years or so. And the experiences I had at working at CMHA, so working with clients that were living with, you know, that are homeless, living with serious mental illness and addictions issues, kind of helped me develop some leadership skills and just really seeing the importance of leadership skills and concepts of building in organizations. And I think now, you know, with the history that I had, being a bit of a punk rock kid, I think that that's important too in leadership, because you have to be creative. You sometimes have to do things a little bit differently and push back on some systems. And so that's how I got where I am today.
Interesting. And I have to say, Jason, you're probably the first one that
I've had on the podcast that has said being a punk rock kid has helped them in leadership, which I love that so much. So I'm going to come back to that in a sec, but I'm just curious for sure. To hear Danny's thoughts as well.
I mean, it would be a long podcast if I talk too much. So I think my life has been an accumulation of experiences that, you know, I'm a big believer in taking calculated risks. I think I was, you know, my parents were both Salvation Army officers. They had retired by the time I was born, but I came and was into a family of people that liked to work with people, that knew how to socialize, knew how to interact with human beings. And so I grew up in that type of environment. And from a young age, I was really good at interacting and working with individuals and groups. And I've had accumulation of those experiences, you know, working in after school programs, working in different low income areas, working in shelters, working in group homes, drop-ins. I just, this accumulation of events, always working with people right in front lines, that, you know, it was a natural progression as I worked into the mental health community. And yeah, I just really believe in the core understanding of working with human beings, that therapeutic alliance, this human being in front of me, and how do we work with this human being to help them consider changes in their lives. And that kind of bleeds into leadership, because leadership's all about your people. And, you know, how do you work with your people? How do you work with your teams? How do you bring your team and your people alive? How do you bring out their strengths? And, you know, me in the role that I'm in now is, you know, that's how I think about it always, is I have definite things that I need to develop, but there's always somebody on the team that is strong in the areas where I may not. And then it's, how do you bring that leadership out in everybody? So I think, you know, it's just, yeah, a lot of accumulation of experiences. And I will say I've traveled the world a lot, and that has changed my life many times and helped me on my perspectives and how I see and how I interact with the people that we serve.
Mm. That's beautifully said. And it sounds like for the both of you, the idea of being in a helping profession came pretty early on in your lives, and that it was just a natural progression to the roles that you're in now.
I think understanding early on for both of us the importance of relationships, which is the crux of leadership.
Now, on that note, I'm curious to come back to the punk rock kids idea, and you said pushing back. So it sounds like you mentioned about pushing back on systems. And, you know, if I were to read between the lines with that a little bit, it's challenging existing systems and maybe looking at ways to do things differently, do things maybe more creatively. And you also both mentioned the idea of relationships and that human being that is in front of you. So I'm curious about that. You know, how do you blend the two ideas between pushing back on things that maybe are the status quo or the way we used to do it, or assumptions or judgments, pushing back on that piece, still keeping the relationship front and center?
I think what the way that breaks down is the difference between sort of managing and leading. And so for us, I mean, they can both coexist. They're both really important. And for, you know, I think for Danny and I, leadership's really important. And it's about working with people, developing relationships. And through developing the relationship is you create the vision of what you're going to work towards, or what you're going to help a person or a group of people move towards. And in doing that, sometimes you got to push back a little bit on some of the systems. The way we want to work is to help grow and to develop people, opposed to using sort of coercion.
So I think one of the things that guides us is really the principles of servant leadership. And, you know, we work with the individuals that we support in our community are individuals with serious mental illness, substance use disorders, heavy trauma. Mm-hmm. And this, the landscape for us from COVID to now has changed a few times. And for us, the aspect of leadership is how we're going to get through this. Because leadership, servant leadership, you know, teaching us about empathy, listening, stewardship, awareness, building community, commitment to the growth of people, humility. Those are just some of that I'm naming off the top of my head. But we have to think about as a community, if we're going to work in the landscape for which we're working, we have to do it in a community way, a team way, a building together way. And how do we connect with each other? Partnerships within our organizations, as partnerships within our partnership community, within our partnership agencies, but also as a bigger community. And it goes right down to teams as well. And so I think for that is part of how we see this work, is to be kind of pushing back. Here's a model of servant leadership. Here's how it can be applied in our organization. And it's going to be lots of bumps. However, we can't serve this population alone. We need to do it as a team. And how do you do that as a team? You got to bring the strengths of your team together, because I can't do this alone. I don't got the ability to do it alone, and I don't got all the skills and abilities to do it. But there is people on the team that I support. There's 16 of them. There is people on that team that have the skills that I don't. And then how do we work together to start making differences in our community? You know, and then the same applies to your organization.
I love that you use the word partnership, and you used it several times and at several different layers, you know, partnering with clients, with other agencies and organizations. And you went through several different layers that is required to serve the population that you serve. One of the things that I do know about your population, based on what you've said and my own experience and what I've heard from others, is that the challenges are pretty complex for these individuals. As you mentioned, you know, mental health challenges, trauma, addictions. What drives the two of you to serve this population and lead with that servant leadership? What is it about this population, or I should say these populations, that are a draw for you?
Well, I think for me, like I've always, since I was young, I've always enjoyed working with vulnerable populations, marginalized populations. And I think it's the enjoyment of helping people move towards their goals. A lot of our clients, they don't have housing, they're struggling with addiction. So it's an opportunity to support people in finding housing, getting connected, reconnected with family, developing relationship, and getting the supports that they need.
Mm-hmm. This is a group of individuals. There's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of, I'm drawn to it, first of all, in that this is a community of individuals that are underserved. They're underfunded. They're underseen. They're underheard. Their needs, their ideas are not listened to in how we see and how we change our systems. And so for me, it's all about how can we get this voice of this individual who has lots to say into the policies and the changing, and get it to the people that are making the decisions related to our funding and, you know, related to making big decisions for our communities, our mental health community, our homeless community, our substance use community. How do we get their voices heard? And I think that is what draws me to it. And you know, I think Jay and I really work from a trauma-informed perspective, and that drives us as well. That there is so much trauma that has happened to these individuals because the system has, you know, for lack of a better word, they have not fit in with that system so many times, whether it's legal, hospital, whichever it may be. And so we really try to work from this place of helping our staff and our agency and trying to help them. You know, there's a gentleman in transactional analysis, is Abe Wagner, and he says, you know, say it straight or get it crooked. And our clients have gotten it crooked for way too long. And so we're trying to help our staff say it straight in a transparent and clear way for our clients so they can make good decisions for themselves. Is that fair, Jay?
Yeah. And I think the other driver for us is it's helping, like no matter what population you're working with, it's helping people develop their strengths, develop meaning and purpose in their lives. And that's, I think for us, like that's a huge driver in the work that we do.
Yeah. I can definitely hear the passion the two of you have, the dedication, the commitment you have for these individuals and these populations. Quite some time ago, I had a outreach nurse on the podcast by the name of Carolyn Brunt, and she is an outreach nurse for Vancouver's downtown east side. And she echoed many of the things that you're saying about trying to get voices heard and getting the perspectives and the lived experiences of those that she serves into policy, into decision making. How do we do that? How do we get those voices heard?
So one of the concepts that Bruce Swan was working with us during COVID was, you know, leading from where we were at. Mm-hmm. And this, I'm going to kind of hit you in a roundabout way, but I want to start with this concept because I think it's the driver of what really helped Jay and I get grounded in this work as well during COVID. And the idea of leading from where you're at has kind of two parts. One, you know, leading from your position, from where you have influence, but the other one is leading from kind of the front, middle, and back. And Jay can talk to that part. I'll talk to the first part. And I think sometimes as leaders, or when you're in the system, you're feeling overwhelmed, you're feeling like you're lost, and you get lost in the structures and all the deficits of the system, we forget what we actually can do. And that leading from that position where we're at was this real empowering place of reminding myself and Jay, like, okay, what do we have? Where can we lead from right now where we are in middle management? What can we do? And that was this, like, we have a team of people that are with us. We can work with this team to start shifting how we look at the landscape and how we look at this, not look at it from a deficit base, but look at it from a strength base. If this is our landscape, how do we work in it? And the shifting of perspectives really starts to change how then the work happens. And so those are the beginnings of the shift, because that role modeling, that modeling then filters to our community partners, filters through the organization. It starts to help people understand that even though you may be a frontline worker or you're in middle manager or wherever you are, there is a position for you. You can lead from that position, if that's fair.
Just building on what Danny was saying, it's how you work within the landscape. And I think traditionally, often in organizations, you hear the kind of saying, you know, flying 40,000 feet above, a metaphor to describe being in a strategic point to be able to look at the landscape and then radio down to the people on the ground level. And I think from a leadership perspective, especially in, you know, 2023 through COVID, flying 40,000 feet above didn't work anymore because you have unstable weather systems coming in. It's not a clear sunny day, so you can't see the landscape clearly. And so for us, it's about being on the ground level with people. And that's how we start to understand change, is that we start to get feedback from the people that are directly in it. They're talking about their experiences, living with homelessness, living with addictions, what's happening within these sort of the rising rates of fentanyl and drug overdoses, and how our staff are being exposed to that. And so for us, it's being on the ground level. It's getting immediate feedback from the people that we're supporting so we can better understand the environment that we're working in, because this is the new landscape. And so when we're supporting people and demonstrating skills of leadership, we want to make sure, like, there's a time to, like, we have to be dynamic. Leadership is something that needs to be dynamic. So there's a time to be on the ground level and leading from the front. If somebody's, you know, new to the role and they're learning how to do things, you have to show them how to do it and where to go. And so that's leading from the front. But the goal for Danny and I and the leadership model that we've been putting into practice is to ultimately get to leading from behind, where we're always in the role of supporting people, helping staff grow and develop, pulling out people's strengths. And so for us, it's about being dynamic with the goal of always leading from the middle or from behind.
In that, I mean, it strikes me that there's an element of flexibility and responsiveness. You know, the word dynamic itself, I think, is a perfect illustration of the ability to adapt and respond to situations. And you mentioned that, you know, from COVID onwards, the landscape is ever changing and likely will be constantly changing. So the idea of having that 40,000 view, things are affecting that maybe we haven't seen before.
Yeah.
Now, you've both talked about you can't do it alone. And that's where you can draw on the strengths of your teams. How do you pick out and identify those strengths? And then how do you nurture those strengths so that the people, your teams, can really flourish?
So I think this is the core of the work. And I really do believe that. There was a gentleman on the podcast that we listened to. What was his name? One of the
Simon Sinek.
And he had interviewed a guy, Bob Chapman, was, and he was talking about that this real belief and that your staff have to be healthy enough when they go home that they're healthy for their families at home is the notion, right? Mm-hmm. That we can't be sending our staff home and it's a terror at home when they're working in really difficult situations all day. Otherwise, we're repeating a cycle that we don't want to repeat. We right. want our staff going home healthy, confident, that they have energy, that they have time in their gas tank for their people and loved ones at home. That matters to us. That matters to our agency. And we have to look at people in that way. And when you start to look at people in that way, that they have people to go home to that they're responsible for, it starts to shift then how we work with them on the ground. And so we provide them the skills to work in this landscape that keeps changing. And then we keep dialoguing with feedback loops. This is what's happening. Okay, let's talk about it. How do we apply a trauma-informed approach, strength-based motivational interviewing? Is there DBT that's needed here? Is it transactional analysis? We're trying to think about our theories and then what are the interventions? But this is really the core of helping our workers, making sure that they're healthy in the work and that they're not working longer hours. They're not doing more than they should. They shouldn't be doing bad rescues. We're trying to keep them grounded in the moment and doing the best possible work they can, knowing that they have to also go home. And I think, you know, clinical supervision helps to start identifying that, you know, whether you have group supervision or you have individual clinical supervision, you start to identify and you're listening for who your people are. What are they saying that they're, you know, where they're driven? Where's their purpose and their meaning and their values? Those often are guidelines to what they really and where they see themselves growing and where they want to be. And that's for us as people supporting them, as leaders, as coaches, as mentors, as coworkers, to help highlight that for them so that we start to show and help people see and develop into the things that really drive them. Because sometimes it's not the work. Like, they love to work with people, but housing someone in this climate is difficult. But it's the, if you can connect them to a purpose that is connected to their values or something that's driven them, and maybe it's just around they would like to teach this one clinical piece to the team because that is really work for them. If that which drives them, then if we give them that opportunity, man, they come alive, and that only makes client interactions better. Is that fair?
And just to add to what Danny's saying, it's supporting a team is all about, it's all about growth and development. Like, we really want to help a team grow, so it's important to provide, like, to nurture the team. And I think we've been able, you know, to do that because we help teams. We contract with teams. By having a contract with the team, we have a clear focus on what the support will look like when we're doing group work. We want to focus on the health and well-being of staff as well as their own professional growth. And then, as Danny was saying, pulling out the meaning and purpose in the work. And we want to make sure that we do that by creating a space that is safe and where everybody is connected and bonding. And I think we've done that. You know, I think one of the tactics or strategies is probably a better word to use is to use humor to keep people connected, especially in a time where it's hard to have humor. Like, there's so much hurt and pain in the work that people do. So to keep people connected through humor, bonding. And I think another piece I would just want to speak to quickly about working as a part of team is to make sure we have the feedback loop. So everybody is involved in providing shape into how a group develops.
What stands out to me is how much attention and care, compassion and support that the two of you invest in the people who are out there in the front lines, who are doing really hard work and faced with really challenging situations on a daily basis. And I appreciate the idea around making sure people are healthy and all the things that go into that so that they can continue doing the work. They can go home be healthy at home and then come back to work in a healthy, well-being state of mind. What happened for you during COVID? How did that change things?
Well, I think one of the things that keeps me, like, the landscape's changed on us, but it was only because clients kept doing what they were naturally doing every day. And yeah. It was us that kind of went into hibernation, you know, and there was less front-facing service, more phone calls. Like, it was harder to find clients, but they just kept doing their daily lives. And then when we came out of COVID, it was like we had to play catch up to see what had happened and where we were and what were the interventions and how people, you know, what social isolation did to people, how much it destroyed their mental health, how much mm-hmm. it increased their substance use, what it did to their trauma. And so I think COVID for us was this real, a bit of a wake-up call for us. You know, we were struggling with being helpless and hopeless a little bit and wondering what the heck, where do we have influence and how do we find our way through this that we can make a change? But it was also sometimes for reflection and thinking and really listening to what the staff had to say and then starting to, you know, plan and work with them to figure out how to get through this together. And so that's where, for the team that I support, we were really focused on the togetherness and working together to figure this out, that they're not alone, that, you know, they're not alone. And as they venture forth into this, and how do we bring back our community partners? How do we remind our partners that they're not alone? You know, because some of the shelter workers, you know, they were doing the hardest work. Sometimes we weren't able to come in, but they were still seeing clients every day through all of this. And they were by themselves a lot of time through it. So I think it's, you know, there's a lot of pieces here of reconnecting with your community, getting back to it, making amends sometimes, you know, sorry, we left you for a month, you know, or longer. Mm-hmm. And so I think there's lots of pieces to that, but COVID taught us a lot of things. What do you got, Jay?
One, I think, you know, another piece building on what Danny was just saying is it's also about the organization. So I think during COVID, there was different protocols in place. Now that COVID is lifted and we're back to doing business the way we used to, it's also about rebuilding organizations, bringing mm-hmm. people, everybody kind of back together, developing trainings and skills workshops, and trying to shift the organizational culture so we can all have a sense of we-ness again. Like we're not, you know, and that we're not siloed and fractured, but everybody's back together with a common vision, common goals.
And I think one of the things, Leah, that really COVID taught, just as Jason was speaking there, that taught us was like, oh my goodness, communication is super important. And maybe the breakdown of everything that and why we have so many problems is communication. Okay, how do we work on helping our staff communicate within the agency, within each other, within themselves? How do we do it for ourselves within teams? But also then the skills. What skills do people need now to work in this landscape? And then really honing back in on skill development within our teams, within the organization. Let's get back. Let's get back and make sure we're really working from a trauma-informed approach and honoring that everything that's shifted. Okay, motivational interviewing. When is that going to pop in? How are we using a strength-based approach? How is that going to flow through? How are we using transactional analysis or our DBT skills, CBT? Like, when are these theories and approaches going to be useful and how do we use them? But then making sure everybody feels skillful in their practice.
And that includes leadership. So it's like, so one of the things that Danny and I have spent a lot of time talking about is leadership's a skill for everyone. It's not, sometimes you hear like people will say the leadership referring to a small group of people that are running the country or an organization, but leadership skills are for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so I think for us, it's about helping everybody develop their leadership skills, their leadership capacity.
That's a perspective that is very close to my heart. And there's so much in what the two of you just said that I think is really important to highlight. And I think what it's keeps circling back to for me and what I'm hearing is that idea of relationships and the pieces that go into making sure that your relationships are solid, are effective, are productive, you know, the communication piece. And the two of you talk about all of these theories and approaches. And what's really, I think, unique and exciting to me is how you take those theories and approaches and apply them on a day-to-day basis. I'm wondering, where did that come from? Was that something innate for the two of you that just manifested quite naturally? Or was this kind of a deliberate choice along the way that you wanted to make sure that your approaches were grounded in research and evidence-based practice?
Danny and I have worked together for many years. And I think we especially came together even tighter during COVID. I think for us, it was really about developing a philosophy. So I think the backbone for the two of us is having a philosophy of how to work with people. And so for us, like serving, you know, servant leadership, serving others, like that theory really resonated with us.
Yeah.
And so we spend a lot of time contemplating and thinking about this approach in the work that we're doing in the organization that we're working with, and wanting to embody it, to model it and mentor it for others. And Danny and I have always been like aligned with, you know, some of the psychodynamic approaches. Danny was talking about transactional, Eric Byrne. These approaches are really important to us because it means that there's a theory, but there's also a set of skills. And to be skillful, you have to practice over and over and over again. So Danny and I have always practiced skills. And then, you know, we've had some mastery of that. And so now we want to teach that to other people and share skillfulness with other people. Our staff are highly skilled, but we want to make sure that we're always talking about being skillful from a servant leadership perspective. Yeah. And so I think that's kind of become like our philosophy and just way of being with people. Is that fair?
Yeah, totally fair. And I think, you know, there's this, you know, there's this often this thing, you know, you go to take a training and you do the training and you spend 2 days at it, but you come back and where's the muscle, right? Like how do we keep the muscle moving? And I think that is just, as Jay was saying, that was really important to us, was this, how do we keep our staff's muscles moving? Because to say you're trauma-informed and to be trauma-informed and to act trauma-informed, that, man, takes a lot of practice. It is so difficult. And it's just not, I have these principles. No, how do you embody collaboration? How do you be safety? How do you create trustworthiness? How do you create all these principles and make it happen? How do you empower? Like, and so it just becomes this, I think it was just super important to us that's where we went with our groups. And then, you know, if we're talking sustainability, it can't be Jason and I forever. So when people start to be skillful, they can start to teach and then take over some of the skills groups that we do. And so they start to lead it, which has happened on my team, the team that I'm supporting. They really we have a skills group that we run biweekly. There's people in that team that have been coming and doing it for over 2 years. They can run that group just as well as I can. And when I'm away, they take it and they lead it. That's sustainable. If I was to go to another position, I know that skills group would continue beyond me. And that is a big piece. As leaders, we have to think about sustainability, because it's not just about me and Jason. We're just a touch in the speck of time. But it's how can what we're creating be carried forward? And how do we empower the rest of the organization, plus the people that are supporting us, to keep it going as well?
That's so powerful, because what I'm hearing the two of you say is we have to model this. As you mentioned, there's a big difference between what you say and what you do. And you have to be able to mesh the two together. And as you said, Danny, I think you said about becoming, and you mentioned about becoming trauma-informed. And I think there's an element there that I could extrapolate to about leadership in general, even for those who maybe don't necessarily have the trauma-informed background or approach. There's that element of becoming what you espouse, becoming what you value or what you say you value. What was maybe the toughest leadership lesson that each of you, or maybe together, experienced? And how did that help you become the leaders you are today?
So in terms of servant leadership, and in a strength-based model, they talk about the inverted hierarchy. And when you really start to adopt that, way of thinking about things that, you know, as a manager, I'm in service of the team I support, who are in service of the clients. And ultimately, I'm trying to be in service of the team to give them everything they need so they can do their jobs and be in service of the clients. I think it's when you have another approach that works, that doesn't believe in that philosophy, or that philosophy is to them very foreign, or they're not interested in that approach. That is where it gets challenging, and where mm-hmm. it gets, you know, where you start to get unfocused, or you want to step out of leadership and become, you know, start to push harder, or you're stepping out of your compassion and your empathy. That's where I think for me, it's really one of the challenges. And, you know, I think that's been a big learning experience for me. And I know when we were getting some support from Bruce, that was super helpful, because it was reminding us back to the mantra, you know, lead from where you're at. You know, where do you have influence? Lead from the bottom up sometimes. Sometimes you got to be on the bottom and you lead from the bottom up. And I think those were the lessons that were super helpful. There's just these little mantras to keep in our head. We are where we're supposed to be. You know, not everybody, this is going to be uncomfortable for people, and not everybody's going to believe it. And that's okay. But leadership takes time, and bringing this philosophy and way of doing and interacting with your staff and your organization and your team and your people, yeah, it takes time. And so I think that is one of my biggest learning lessons. Stay back to my mantras. You know, there is going to be people that don't believe in it. That is okay, because that's how change happens. And, mm-hmm. you know, those people too have really good questions. If I can be compassionate, empathic, and listen, which is one of the core tenets of servant leadership, if I can just shut off my mouth and listen with my ears, they have some really good questions that maybe they need answered to be able to get rid of their ambivalence.
Well, I think for me, you know, a leadership lesson, I think what was really highlighted for me during COVID was just how important effective communication is. And I remember, like, you know, you and I, Danny, were talking about this, but just how much energy can sometimes get put into, you know, debating things, one-upmanship, games, trying to coerce people into doing things, and just how much energy gets wasted. And with effective communication, it's just like the importance of discussion, like very clear, straight, direct communication, celebrating different points of view, you know, and wanting to create sort of a safe structure where people can voice different opinions and thoughts, where you're not going to get your views, not going to get deconstructed. Your different opinions are going to be heard. We can have, you know, healthy adult or mature grown up discussions, you know, opposed to like question period at Parliament Hill, you know? So I think for me, coming out of that was really just the importance of clear, direct, effective communication and feedback, to make sure that we're always getting feedback so we can gauge where we are in relation to other people and the people that we're trying to support, and how much further an organization entity would be if we were able to really fine tune and shape healthy communication.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in there that I think is just resonating so much. And this idea of open communication and creating environments of safety where people can ask the questions that they want in a healthy way, in a respectful way. There's so much in there that I think is so important to any role and any person who is working with human beings. The two of you just blow me away. And to close out our time together, I'm interested in knowing, what words of wisdom would you offer to the other leaders out there?
Continuous learning. I think we're in times, unstable systems. We always have to be continuously learning. And I think if people are coming into leadership, there's some great books on leadership. But the thing that I love about the topic is that leadership pulls from all sorts of different schools of knowledge. So if you really want to learn the intricacies of leadership, is to learn about biases, cognitive gaps, systems theory, influence and persuasion strategies, you know, and just anything around communication. Mm-hmm. So for me, it would be continuous learning.
I think for me, I'll be short and sweet, and that's not always the case, but today I will. I think it's just that the wisdom is in your teams, is in your room, is in your organizations. Mm-hmm. And our job is to find that wisdom and use it to help move along the organization, your team, the individuals, the client situations. Just the wisdom is in the room.
To both of those responses, all I can say is wow and thank you. Thank you both for sharing your time and your wisdom, your expertise, but I think most of all, your passion and your dedication. So thank you for the work that you do.
Well, thank you for having us. This was real fun for us too.
This is a great opportunity. Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today at Central Line, Leadership in Healthcare. Also, if you liked what you heard, please head on over to Apple Podcasts to leave us a review. Be sure to subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Also, if you'd like to learn more about our host, Leah Woodchick, check out talltreesleadership.com.